Trustee Vickers, are you ready to begin the meeting?
Yes, please call the meeting to order at 9:01 on June 23rd, 2021, and ask for a roll call, please.
Trustee Bronstein?
Here.
Trustee McNicholas?
Here.
Trustee Perry?
Here.
Trustee Vickers?
Here.
Trustee Jones has not yet arrived.
So we first have a public hearing on the adoption of the final budget for 2021-22. So open the public hearing.
At 9:01?
Yes. Any comment? Any public comment?
I have not received any.
Any board member comment? Then we'll close the public hearing and move to the pledge. And
okay.
Patty has the flag. Stand. Ready to begin? I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Martha.
I'd like to move out of a motion to approve the agenda. Are there any changes or additions to the agenda?
No.
Okay. So moved.
Second.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Trustee Bronstein?
Aye.
Trustee Jones? Trustee McNicholas?
Aye. Aye.
Trustee Perry?
Aye.
Trustee Vickers?
Yes. And our first item today is a presentation from Los Angeles Orange County Regional Consortium. And Patty, are you going to introduce our guest?
Yes.
Thank you.
This morning, I'm happy to present to you our speaker from the LAOCRC, the Regional Consortium, which is made up of members from business and industry, community college representative, community member representatives, K-12 member representatives, and basically anybody else who wants to join. So Michael is very involved in the K-12 Strong Workforce Program partnership in the region, and we asked him to come and give a presentation and update on our work with them that we've been doing over the past few years. So thank you, Michael, for joining us. Go ahead and unmute yourself.
Wonderful. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Patty, for the introduction and for the invitation to have the opportunity to present on our strong workforce programs in Orange County. Thank you all for having me here, and I look forward to sharing a little bit of the K-12 SWP structure as far as the K-14 technical assistant provider and also the K-12 pathway coordinators. Don't worry, I'll go through some of the information for that. But then also showcase a few of the best practices and model programs that CCA has been able to facilitate over the past couple of years. I'm very new to the region. I did most of my work in the Inland Empire and in Los Angeles, so I'm really new to Orange County. But I've already became a fan of CCA and just admired the work that both Patty Romo, Nicole Berkman, and many members and staff members of your organization are doing in your region in Orange County, which is not duplicated in other regions in Orange County or, you know, in other, you know, counties itself like LA, San Bernardino, or Riverside. And I do have to say that many of the best practices and model programs that are taking place at CCA will serve somewhat as a blueprint to implement in other aspects of Orange County. So I'm really excited to be here and to share a little bit more of my role, the K-12 pathway coordinator role, which is also Nicole Berkman's role. But really just want to emphasize the great work that you're all doing. So again, thank you for having me. If possible, am I able to share?
I'm going to give you that. There you go. Now you can share.
Wonderful. Thank you. Okay. Is everyone able to see this?
Yes.
Wonderful. Okay, so I guess very briefly, I should pretty much review the LAOC-RC consortium as a whole. There are a total of five consortiums statewide, and each consortium covers a region throughout the state. There's the San Diego Consortium, there's the High Desert Consortium in the Inland Empire. There are a few consortiums up in the northern part of the state of California. And the Los Angeles Orange County Regional Consortium is the second biggest consortium in our state. And pretty much what we do is just to ensure that there are a high sense of collaboration between the community colleges and the K-12 LEAs. A lot of our work is really involved with ensuring that students are transferring at a decent rate, that students are both accomplishing their college and career successes that they would like to achieve themselves. And just most recently, we're also the distributor of not only K-12 strong workforce funding, but also community college strong workforce funding as well. So that's where my role and Nicole's role comes in as far as K-12 strong workforce funding goes. Let's see here. Sorry. Bam. Wonderful. So for the first slide, I really want to cover the umbrella of what the K-12 SWP Key Talent team's responsibility is. Now, the Key Talent team comprises of myself, the K-14 technical assistant provider, and then four K-12 pathway coordinators, one of which is Nicole Berkman. The K-12 pathway coordinators are split up throughout the county, Northern Orange County, Southern Orange County, Central, and then the coast. And Nicole pretty much has reign over the southern part of Orange County. So here are some of the responsibilities that we have been charged by the California Community College Chancellor's Office as far as it comes to K-12 SWP. The first one is just to provide regional leadership. As I mentioned, the K-12 PCs are divided throughout the entire county, and then the K-14 tab basically provides services, direction for the K-12 pathway coordinators as we move on through the academic year. Another aspect of this regional leadership is just to ensure that the community colleges are present for the strong workforce K-12 SWP programs. There are a total of 31 SWP programs taking place right now at the K-12 level, and Nicole Berkman, the other K-12 pathway coordinators, and myself are pretty much in charge of ensuring that all of those project leads have all of the technical assistance that they need in order to be successful. Whether it is bringing the community colleges to the fold, or whether it's assisting them with submitting data and fiscal reporting at the end of every quarter, so on and so forth. So just providing regional leadership and technical assistance specifically to our K-12 SWP project leads. The second one is a regional needs assessment. And this is something that we'll dive just a little bit deeper in later in this presentation. I'm very new to the region, as I mentioned. I've been here now 4.5 to 5 months. And during my first 3 months, what we did is facilitate a needs assessment. All the K-12 pathway coordinators, our regional directors of employer engagement, our leads of all of our K-12 SWP programs, our CTE deans at the community colleges, and various other stakeholders were involved in this needs assessment. And basically what we were looking for were, what are the gaps in our career pathway, and our career pathways at the K-12 level? And also, what are the gaps between the career pathways at the K-12 and the CTE programs at the community colleges to ensure that there's a seamless line of communication and also just a seamless program, so a pipeline that students can go through from K-12 to community colleges. And through this needs assessment, we developed 7 initiatives that we will embark on, starting now until the end of the next academic year. So I'll briefly review the seven initiatives with all of you, and I would love to have, you know, one-on-one meetings with all of you if you'd like to learn a little bit more of these initiatives or how you yourself could be embedded or involved with some of these initiatives, because it's these initiatives are really involved region-wide. The third is to provide professional development specifically to our K-12 Strong Workforce Project leads. And what this is just to ensure that our project leads have the information and the skills they need in order to be successful. This comes in the form of providing a grant writing 101 workshop. Very soon, our K-12 partners will be submitting SWP proposals sometime in September. So we will be facilitating a grant writing 101 workshop because the Chancellor's Office would like to see a lot more applications when it comes to K-12 SWP. The funny thing is that we not only provide professional development for K-12 SWP, but also for Career Technical Education Incentive Grant as well, known as CTIG. Another form of professional development would be how to properly facilitate regional advisories or, you know, sub-regional industry advisory meetings. But most importantly, how to ensure that there are follow-ups, that the relationships remain warm between faculty and industry. Another form would be work-based learning, how to properly evaluate work-based learning programs. So all of these examples are pillars of K-12 SWP. And if you look at all of our K-12 SWP projects, they usually fall within those buckets: work-based learning, regional advisories, career preparation, so on and so forth. So our professional development will be focused on what our projects look like region-wide. The fourth one is to coordinate collaboration. As you all may know, no LEA can submit a K-12 SWP proposal unless they have a community college partner attached to that proposal. Our role is just to ensure that the community colleges are actually engaged and involved throughout the lifetime of that grant or, you know, project. And if they're not, then it's our job to ensure that the community colleges are brought to the fold. Another aspect of collaboration, regional collaboration, is something that the K-12 pathway coordinators have done on their own as far as facilitating regional advisories. They themselves, as a key talent team, have taken on the task of bringing all of the instructors from all of the ROPs and even the K-12 districts together to meet with industry partners to ensure that they receive the latest information on certifications to ensure that their pathways are enhanced. But again, the extremely important component of this is the follow-up, ensuring that our faculty, our instructors are implementing some of those resources and advice and suggestions into their programs. So there's other forms of collaboration as well, but basically we convene the entire region together. And the last one is K-12 Strong Workforce Program Management. And this comes in the form of ensuring that our regional and our local programs are spending funds properly, and also ensuring that they are spending funds, ensuring that those funds are exhausted by the sunset of the grant. So that's pretty much five of our main responsibilities. Data is within all of them, so I didn't have an aspect for data, but we are charged also with assisting all of our K-12 SWP and CTIG partners to assist them in submitting as much data as possible in the CalPAS, CalPADS, and also in the NOVA system. We love those times, don't we? So now just quickly want to go through some of the regional initiatives. As I mentioned, we facilitated a needs assessment during my first 3 months as an entire region, and we really comprise that into seven initiatives that we've already begun taking forward. The first one is regional communication. There are two forms of K-12 strong workforce programs. There are regional ones and there are local ones. The regional ones will be overseen by me, and the local ones will be overseen by the K-12 pathway coordinators. Believe it or not, the structure does not exist statewide. This is of its own kind here in Orange County. Orange County is far ahead other counties when it comes to SWP, also our career pathways and partnerships that exist. So we are not in the development phase, we are in the enhancement phase is what we like to say. So that's what we see for regional communication. And then the K-12 pathway coordinators oversee the local SWP programs as well. And that's for Nicole, she'll be overseeing all of the Southern County SWP programs. The second one is something that's already been happening are the regional industry advisories. And we decided to make this an initiative because those who have participated, in which there have been two regional advisory meetings and had an attendance of over 100 partners in both of those meetings individually. So based on that, we saw that there's a high need for that. And also based on the feedback from our regional partners, industry and education, they'd like to see this moving forward. So Nicole Berkman and the other K-12 pathway coordinators, this is their project, this is their initiative that they spearhead. And have done a wonderful job so far. So we look forward to seeing what other regional advisories take place in the next academic year. Then there's e-articulation. There's two aspects to the e-articulation, but I really want to focus on one because CCA does a beautiful job with articulation. Not in the form of articulation as far as executing these agreements, but how to ensure that students realize those articulated courses. And I'll mention a little bit more about that in the presentation. Countywide, only 2% of students who are in an articulated course actually realize those credits. And what I mean by that is they can complete the course with an A or a B, but then they themselves have to go through a process to ensure that they get the college credit for that and develop a college transcript. Countywide, it's only 2%. In your region, it's 30%, specifically because of the strategy you take. And when it comes to this e-articulation initiative, what we'd like to do is adopt what CCA is doing into other counties or other sub-regions within our county. And I'll share a little bit more about that later. And then there's also the Early College Credit Coalition, which this would be a time to bring all the dual enrollment and articulation folks from K-12 and community colleges together to continue discussing how we can elevate our agreements regionally rather than sub-regionally. Another regional initiative is K-12 professional development. This is something that I mentioned earlier. It's one of our main components as the K-12 SWP Key Talent Team. We're currently in the process of identifying which modality we're going to take in facilitating these professional development opportunities, whether we're going to set up a YouTube page or pretty much serve as a consultant on a needs basis or other forms of professional development. We'll see. And on July 13th, myself and the other K-12 pathway coordinators will have a retreat and we'll really dive deep in this professional development to see exactly how we're going to facilitate this in the upcoming academic year. Then there's also the K-12 SWP budget review. I mentioned this earlier. The K-12 PCs and myself are pretty much in charge of ensuring that our projects are spending budgets or spending funds properly, but also ensuring that the budgets are completely exhausted by the sunset of the grant. And then lastly, K-12 SWP and CTIG grant support. This comes in Grant Writing 101, but also when it comes to the grant writing season, we provide as much information as possible so that they're able to write a very strong proposal. We don't write it for them, but we give them basically the cheat sheet, so to speak. And then the LEAs from there will pretty much put the information that they need in order to get funding. So those are the seven regional initiatives. And again, if you would like to have a one-on-one meeting with me or a group meeting with me, and you saw one of these initiatives and you have an idea or you believe you can be involved in some capacity, please feel free to reach out to me and we can definitely have a discussion centered around that. So now to the best part, CCA best practices. This slide will have three best practices, and the next slide will be focused on the model programs that are going to highlight two programs that CCA is currently facilitating. The first best practice is something I've never seen ever before. As I mentioned, I've done most of my work in the Inland Empire, San Bernardino and Riverside, and some work also in Los Angeles in terms of career pathways. And never have I ever seen ROPs and a district as embedded as CCA and Capistrano Unified School District. It is a thing of beauty. In other regions or in other sub-regions, there has to be some form of buy-in or persuasion that goes on between the ROP and the K-12 districts. But in your region, you're just completely embedded within the DNA of your district. So just know that that is something completely unique and does not exist from what I've seen at all. I am actually confident to say it doesn't exist statewide. So that's wonderful. You're also within the master schedule, which is probably the biggest challenge and hurdle that ROPs statewide have to overcome with their partner LEAs. Is many of the times ROP programs are not, or courses are not offered during the master schedule. But that's something that I've really admired of CCA. The second one is that 100% of your courses that you facilitate are, they meet UCAG requirements, which again is not something that happens quite often. 100% is something I've never heard of before, but when we facilitate these regional industry advisories, Nicole always has the opportunity to represent CCA. And we have community college there, K-12 there, we have industry partners, and CCA usually stands out because of that 100% UC A through G requirement. And not only that, it's also the honors UC A through G requirement courses are also 100% accepted by the UCs as well, which is also not the case in many other parts of the region. And then lastly, this is possibly my favorite one, is the articulation credit cohort strategy that CCA takes. As I mentioned, countywide, only 2% of students actually realize their articulated course credit. In your region, it's about 30 to 35%. And the reason why is because, one, there's a strong partnership between your community college partner, Saddleback Community College, but also you use a system that's not used countywide, which is the CAITMA system, which really helps keep track of the students who are taking these courses. But I think the most essential component here is that your instructors, your counselors, and other partners are able to guide students through the articulation process, pretty much the tail end of the process. They've taken the course, they've passed the course, and in other parts of the region, it's up to the student and the parent to go and navigate through the system in order to get those credits. But in your region, your counselors, your instructors, and your partners take that responsibility, which is something that we're going to try to change that philosophy or way of thinking region-wide over this next academic year. And we're going to use your blueprint, your process, as a blueprint to implement throughout the region, just to increase that 2% to 5% at least. And then we have the CCA model programs. There are two model programs that I really like here at CCA. The first is the dual enrollment programs that are basically going on with Saddleback College. And these are the several programs going on. The automotive program is new, the business, computer information management, biotechnology, and then also they're in the development of another dual enrollment program. Dual enrollment is not easy. It's a lot easier in your region because of the partnerships that you already have with Saddleback. And Kari, the dean over there at Saddleback, is just completely open to all types of partnership. And the relationship between Patty Romo, Nicole Berkman, and Kari are just extremely strong. So any ideas, any ways that pathways can be enhanced, Kari is usually there to agree with what is needed to ensure that those pathways are properly enhanced. And then also the industry partnerships. Part of strong workforce, K-12 and also community colleges, is to build more and a better CTE program. And how do you do that? It's not just curriculum, it's also work-based learning, which is possibly, I would say, the biggest component. And CCA does a wonderful job of that through its industry partnerships with the Waldorf Astoria and also with Kaiser Permanente. This In the Inland Empire and in LA was primarily my part of work. I had to provide work-based learning opportunities for students in both regions. But the way that Waldorf and Kaiser are embedded within your curriculum, embedded within your schedule, where students have to 3 or 2 days a week go into the site, that's something I've never had the opportunity to do, which is, that's definitely a best practice or a model program that we would do our best to promote region-wide. And I mentioned to Patty and I mentioned to Nicole various times, there are several conferences that are just around the corner. Part of our job is to tell the story. And a big portion of our job is to promote best practices and model programs. Of course, every aspect of this region, there are best practices and model programs. But when it comes to CCA, as far as process and programs go, they really, they've got it on point, to a point where I even joke that they should have their own showcase, their own conference, so that the region and you know, areas of our region are able to attend and see exactly the great work that's going on in CCA and also with their partners. So that's all I have today. I'm happy to take any questions. These two pictures here are basically pictures that Nicole and I took when I had my first in-person meeting with the Orange County partner. And the hospitality was that of Southern hospitality. Nicole did a wonderful job basically introducing me to CCA. That's at your training center. I was able to also see a grand opening of one of your college and career centers and got to see some of your students in action and also some of your instructors as well. So that was a really fun time. We also had lunch and just talked a little bit. That was also part of the assessment process as well. So that's pretty much all I have today. That's the email right there, sakoto_michael@RancholSantiagoCommunityCollegeDistrict.edu. And again, if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer. But if you'd like to follow up with a one-on-one meeting to see how you could be involved with some of our initiatives, I'm also open to that discussion as well.
And Michael, I'd like to point out that that's you in the turnout in the picture, right? That's you in that uniform.
Yeah, that's myself and Nicole. You know, Nicole's a fun person. I was like, man, I hope the fire captain's not going to be mad, because, you know, they're very particular of how they put their uniforms up or how they put them away. But we did our best. To put
well, you had to try the work-based learning component. So.
Oh, absolutely. It took me about 4 or 5 minutes to put all that up together. And I know, I think the data out there, the stat shows that a fire person has to put it on within 1 minute or less. Minute. Yeah. So I wouldn't be good in that profession.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Michael? Sheila?
Yeah, so thank you very much for telling us about this. And, you know, we do know, I think most of us know, that we are a standout in possibly in the whole state, maybe in the country, in what we're doing. And we've got a great staff, but I also think as a board member, our board has provided good leadership in this. So thank you for pointing that out. I want to go back to kind of the beginning of your presentation, where you talk about how the community colleges must be involved and ensuring that funds are spent properly. I'm sure you are acquainted with one of your board members, Mr. John Hanna. John is a very, very longtime friend of mine. When I have talked to him about what Rancho's involvement is, and it's been a little while, he was completely ignorant about this program. And again, it's been a while, he may know by now. I do not believe the funds are being spent properly in this consortium. Not that we're spending them improperly, but I think the county is. I think the money, Rancho decided to send the money, and you know, again, the board didn't know, because I asked who decided this, and John Hanna, who's a pretty smart and very long time board member, didn't know how this was decided. And they decided to send the money straight to the Orange County Department of Education, who decided to keep the money funding their Orange County Pathways program, which doesn't help our district one iota. Everything we've done in spite of the consortium. And I am still pretty unhappy about it. And I have been saying this over and over again ever since the Governor Brown decided that this is how it was going to happen. I would love to sit down with you and Mr. Hanna and talk about this more, because I continue to be unhappy. We are doing all of this great stuff, and it is not a good partnership with Orange County Department of Education, which I believe is wasting a lot of money that ought to be going to students. And yes, we are, the whole partnership is geared towards smaller entities, smaller ROPs than ours, and the ones that are doing a good job and that are large are getting the dirty end of the stick on this. We are treated the same as all the others. We should not be treated the same as all the others. As you say, we've got 30 to 35% articulation when the rest of the county's 2%. We know what we're doing. Leave us the heck alone. Give us our money and stop making us jump through these silly hoops. Stop spending money on things that are not helpful to us. As you can tell, I'm a little mad about it. And yes, I would like to sit down with you and if not Mr. Hanna, Mr. Yarborough, whomever on your board, and talk to them about it, because this was a bad decision and it continues to be a bad decision.
Now, when you talk about the distribution of the funds, are you talking about the CTIG funds or K-12 SWP funds?
Can I bump in there just a second?
Please.
Yeah. So, Michael, our biggest issue is that CCA itself, we don't get much in funding. As you know, in round three, we only got $57,000, which for us, you know, when it was one pot of money, when it was CTIG, we got $1.5 million from just that side. We got $3 million overall from that one pot of money. Since that got divided years ago by the governor, CCA has not gotten very much money from Strong Workforce. We still get money from CTIG, but we don't get very much from Strong Workforce. But we do the work because Capistrano and Laguna Beach, our partners, have gotten money from Strong Workforce. Their first grant round, they each got $577,000. In the second grant round, we applied and Orange County Pathways applied. CUSD got two grants that year, almost $500,000. And then in round three, CUSD got about $220,000 and we got $57,000. So CCA as an entity, and this board represents CCA, has not gotten very much money from the K-12 Strong Workforce. But as you know, we do this work because it's embedded in what we do. We've done this work for years, and it benefits the Strong Workforce program that we do this work. But honestly, we have not gotten much funding from that grant.
I mean, basically, I think you think that the money was just stolen from us.
I wouldn't say that. I think if we're talking specifically about K-12 SWP, and that's what we're talking about, right? The K-12 SWP, not CTIG. Okay, so the process for K-12 SWP is that each LEA has the opportunity to apply to submit three proposals. The consortium does not decide which proposals are approved. My role is to ensure that we put a selection committee together for the K-12s. And the community college is called the Oversight Committee. The Oversight Committee decides which ones get approved and which ones don't. And based on the ADA, the money is allocated. There's an equation that's facilitated by the state, which is similar equation that takes place at the K-12 level. Our role is just to put the selection committee together, which are a member of 11 individuals who represent industry, education, community colleges, and then they themselves decide which programs get passed, and then how much money or how many funds are allocated towards those programs. The beautiful thing about me coming in with a newer perspective is that we can properly train our selection committee members to put a higher essence or a higher, way higher the the results. Many of these applications need to have results of programs. You all have the results. You have the best practices and model programs. As long as that's facilitated properly within the proposal, it should be fine. Now, the funds go to OCDE specifically because that's the structure that is facilitated statewide. We do not disseminate the funds as a consortium.
No, that's not the structure that disseminated statewide. The structure was to go to the community colleges and the community and Rancho, someone at Rancho decided that the entity overseeing it was going to be the Orange County OCDE. It didn't have to be. That's what they decided. The counties are not the ones involved, or the county board, departments of education are not the ones in all instances.
So there are two forms of strong workforce. The community college strong workforce funds go to the community colleges. The K-12 strong workforce funds go specifically to the K-12s. So I think I need to do some research and see exactly how the funds are to be distributed. There are two forms of strong workforce funds. That is certain. One goes to community college, the other one's to the K-12. I'll see what other structures exist statewide, because I know for a fact that K-12 funds need to go to a K-12 entity, and then from there it gets distributed, just as the leads are always the K-12. The pathway coordinators, for example, there has been discussions to bring the pathway coordinators to the community colleges, but that's not part of legislation. The K-12 pathway coordinators must be at the K-12 level. So I need to see exactly what's going on with the funds, but I can assure you that I don't think anyone's running away with the funds, because that's decided by the selection committee, how much a proposal is awarded.
Right, but a lot of money is going straight to OCDE. They are siphoning off a lot of this money, and that is not proper. They lost funding for their OC Pathways, and they decided this was a way to keep OC Pathways alive.
So what OC Pathways does have, and I alluded to this earlier, was, you know, there are regional projects, and then there are local projects. So I see, yes, you're correct. OC Pathways and OCDE have complete control of the regional projects. And that's possibly what you're bringing up, because those regional projects are supposed to be for all LEAs within Orange County.
Right, but they don't help us.
Yeah.
But a lot of money goes into it that we have to do separately. I think they did implement a substitute system. Well, if you get a substitute for pharmacy who lives in I don't know, Yorba Linda, they're not going to come and teach a pharmacy class in South Orange County for whatever it is, $15 an hour. We have our own substitute system, and we have to have that. These are the kinds of things that are irrelevant to our needs, yet the money was siphoned off by OCDE to support those things. And it's a problem for us. Now, I'm not as fluent in this as Patty is. Patty has to be nice to these people. I don't have to be nice to them. And I'm not going to be nice to them. They have stolen our money. But I will be happy to meet with whoever and talk about this, because it is criminal what has happened with this money in Orange County. It's criminal.
Okay. Then it's definitely centered towards the regional projects, because the local projects go straight to the school districts, and then from there they decide what they do.
Yeah.
But I know for a fact the regional projects, a good percentage of those funds do go into OC Pathways and OCDE.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And what they've done with those regional projects is that they've created task forces. I'm in a few task forces, and so is Nicole. These task forces do come up with great informational and marketing material, but this is good, because I'm overseeing the regional projects. I'll probably have to dive deeper into exactly how they're using the funds, because many of their regional projects are $800 to $1 million. And how they're properly using those funds. So thank you for bringing that up. When it comes to the selection committee, because we're trying to have an entirely new selection committee sometime in August, this is something that they should definitely be aware of and educated on, That way, when they select which projects they'd want to facilitate or who's leading these projects, they're better informed of, you know, what's been going on countywide. So, yes, you are...
I'm Gila Jones.
Gila Jones.
Yep.
We should, probably you, myself, and Patty should meet a little bit more to see exactly, you know, what your thoughts are, your perspectives, and perhaps when it comes to the selection committee, what I should share with them as part of their professional development moving forward. And then from there, we can also, I wouldn't select a board member from our consortium. I'd want to meet with either our director of Orange County or even our executive director of the consortium so that this can be facilitated to them. I don't know if they've heard this in the past. I haven't. This is my first time, and thank you for letting me know. But this is something that definitely needs to be corrected right away.
Okay, thank you.
Patty, can you work on setting that up?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And I think, you know, we know that in Orange County, there's politics that underlie a lot of this. And so I know you'll deal with that diplomatically.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Believe it or not, though, Orange County is, when it comes to collaboration and understanding, is a lot better than in other counties. My counterpart in LA is going through, you know, a hurricane in Los Angeles. So it's a lot tougher out there. I think Orange County, because we're smaller but mighty, we're able to get the message done a lot quicker. And because we're smaller with a lot less institutions, we're able to make change right away. So yes, Gila and Patty, if we want to, we should probably put our director of Orange County into this discussion when we meet. As you know, Gustavo is retiring. His last day will be next week. We do have our new director, which you probably know. Her name is Jessie Klee from the Center of Excellence in Orange County.
I don't think I know her. Do you know her, Nicole? Yes. Okay, good.
Okay. So this would be good for her to just be aware of. She controls more the community college side of SWP, but still, her being aware of this information is it's vital to what's going to happen moving forward.
I think that will be great for us to discuss it, Michael. And really, I think a lot of the contention has come from Orange County Department of Ed deciding to hire all the counseling coordinators. That's a big chunk of that money, and it does duplicate the work that we already do. And so we end up doing the data pull and the work and the reporting for them. So that, you know, that's one of the biggest contentions. So but I'm happy to have that conversation with you and Gila at another time.
Absolutely. I would love to. And the round four K-12 SWP proposals are going to be asking specifically for outcomes and metrics. If they're looking for continued awards for specific task forces and things like that, then they would need to provide how exactly those marketing materials or whatever else OCDE and OC Pathways oversees, how exactly that's impacted the students. So that's part of the professional development aspect for the selection committee. I would continue to love to have this conversation, and next week would be an ideal time to have that.
Great. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you, and huge thanks to Gila for bringing this up and working on this for all of our students.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Michael.
Absolutely.
Okay, if we don't have any other questions for Michael, then we can move on in our agenda. And thank you again, Michael, for joining us.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Your executive director's report?
Yes. Okay. I'd like to first start out by expressing my gratitude to Capistrano Unified School District. This year, we were expecting our funding from CTIG to come from CDE in January. Then they started telling us it would be in March.
Then in March, they told us April. And then in April, they told us 6 to 10 more weeks. And because that $1.3 million is critical to our budget, we were facing a cash flow shortage. And so I reached out to Capistrano Unify, and they were very gracious and quickly advanced us $300,000 to get us through June with the cash flow. And that will come out of our allocation for next year. And so I do want to let you all know how grateful I am that Capistrano was able to help us. And honestly, the superintendent, her first reaction was, yes, of course, we'll help. So I appreciate that very much. And we can talk more about that when we get to the budget part, because I would like to let you know how we're avoiding that from happening again. Okay, and then second, I'd like to give you a little bit of a legislative update regarding career technical education. In the governor's grant, or I'm sorry, in the governor's budget that we're waiting for him to sign, is a proposal to double our CTIG allocation to $300 million statewide, and then it will be decided by CDE how to allocate those funds. So, of course, I'm advocating that they double our CTIG as well. And so we'll continue working on that. There's also legislation that will provide JPA ROPs additional funding for the emergency. As you know, we did not receive any of the CARES Act funds or any of the emergency funding in the past year and a half, and yet we did have additional expenditures for teachers who could not return to work. So we had subs that were in the classroom. We had additional assignments. Many of our teachers filled in for Capistrano as substitutes. And so we did have additional expenditures during the year related to our emergencies. Many of our teachers had to teach additional hours just to catch students up. We had to hold skills days for students to come and get in-person skills training because they weren't allowed to previously. And we're still working on that. This summer, many of our teachers are working with their students to get their skills completed for licensure and certification. So all of those expenditures add up. I don't think that the legislators are always aware that JPA ROPs hire their own teachers and run their own organization and are a separate school district. And so we don't get included in the regular funding. If it's a county ROP, they do not hire their own teachers. Their districts hire their teachers. Okay. If it's a JPA like us, we hire our own teachers and we have our own structure and everything. So finally, there is money in the governor's budget to the tune of $86 million for emergency funding that would be a two-year time frame for us to spend it. There's 86 million and there's only 24 JPAs in the state. So we're looking at getting a chunk of that money. They're going to be deciding how to allocate that after the governor signs the budget. And it'll probably take them 6 months to determine how they're going to allocate the money. But we're hearing that it might be on a student basis, per student served, because ROPs no longer report ADA, as you know. So they'll look at our enrollment numbers and determine it that way. If they do, then we're in very good shape to get quite a bit of money from that grant. But I will continue working with School Services, who represents our JPAs in the state of California, on that allocation formula. There's two bills that would affect JPA ROPs specifically. One is AB 388. That bill is the one that would make ROP teachers permanent, give them permanency. And we have met with our legislators to let them know how that would be difficult for us, because even though two teachers hold the same credential in health services, the one teacher's teaching dental assisting and the other's teaching medical assisting, and if you had to bump one, neither of them could pick up that class because it takes specific skills to teach dental assisting. It takes specific skills to teach medical assisting. And there are so many that fall under that same credential. And another example would be auto and aviation. They're both in the transportation sector, but one is skill does not relate to the other. So a teacher can't teach piloting and auto mechanics. So we're trying to get that point across to our legislators. Capital Advisors thinks we have a very good chance that this bill is just going to stall out. So that bill, we're keeping a very close eye on, and I'll keep you updated through board updates on it. And then the other one is AB 438, and that is the one that gives classified staff the same courtesy of notice March 15th. Very similar to what we do with all of our teachers. That doesn't affect the ROP so much. We follow that traditionally, but we're not required by Ed Code to do so because our employees are hourly at will. So although, you know, we would probably follow the requirement traditionally, we're not required to do that. So we'll wait and see what happens with that bill as well. Okay. And then this has been a remarkable year. And although we're not presenting our year-end information yet, I just wanted to give you a highlight of some of our accomplishments this year, even in the challenges that we've been facing. And I really want to thank our staff. Nicole got a lot of props in that last presentation because she's doing so much work regionally, but she's also working together with Kim on many of these initiatives just for CCA. So, as Michael mentioned, 100% of our CCA courses are UCA through G, and Kim and Nicole stay on top of that. If we get a new class, they submit it immediately to UC for approval, and that's all them. They've done all that work. Over 3,000 students are earning college credit in CTE courses, so that is a huge accomplishment, and again, our partnership with Saddleback College is a huge factor. 1,400 students are enrolled in honors-weighted courses for CTE. Over 5,000 students have earned industry certification or state licensing in this year. We've modernized and opened 2 of our 6 planned college and career centers. Next one's coming very soon. We developed about 37 weekly video presentations on career pathways for the Future Fridays career series that we're offering to K-5, soon K-8 students. We did it during extended learning, but in the future we'll have a library that our counselors and academic advisors will have access to do presentations throughout the year from our career centers. And then we had over 30 students representing all of our high schools as CCA student ambassadors, and we have a group that has applied for next year of about 35. So we're going to be adding to that number of student ambassadors, and those students learn leadership skills. They give tours, they talk about our CTE classes. They're basically becoming experts in career technical education and pathways. And then our students in the Building and Industrial Trades Academy at San Juan Hills High School built a tiny home. I hope you saw the pictures of it. If not, I'll send them to you, but it's pretty cool. And so even during this strange year, they were able to build a tiny home. approximately 110 students completed the new program we have called Medical Innovation Research and Entrepreneurship Program. We call it MIRE. And they completed that. This upcoming year will be really exciting because they'll get to go to the labs at UCI. So we're excited about that. Our culinary arts teachers worked with the K-5 students during extended learning to offer culinary training and get students interested in a culinary program. And then, as Michael mentioned, we hosted regional CTE industry advisories. As you know, we've been doing those for 50 years, but we hosted them as regional partnerships between all the ROPs this last year, and Nicole was a big part of that work, so was Kim. We opened the CTE lab at Dana Hills High School that we're currently using in partnership with special education for students who are on a certificate track and not a degree track. We had about 20 students in the program that completed it this year. And we're building it up even bigger and better for next year so that we can also turn it into an engineering lab for all students. We launched our early college Running Start program at Capo Valley High School, and Nicole and I serve on that team. We're very instrumental in getting this partnership off the ground because we have such a close relationship with Carrie Irwin over at Saddleback College. And Carrie and I really hold many meetings without the bigger group to get the work done. And our virtual enterprise and robotics students earned top 5 awards in their categories in their competitions, even virtually. So fantastic work. We're returning to in-person internships, and so many of our students missed the opportunity to do their internships last year. So we have given them the option to complete their internships during the summer and in the fall, even though they may not be enrolled in the class anymore. We want to make sure that our students who are in those programs have the opportunity to do the internship. So our teachers are working double time to get students, current students and past students, through their internship programs with our business partners. And over 100 students are on the waiting list for our robotics and engineering classes this summer. I bet we could fill 5 of them, you know. So it's been really exciting. Martha?
Patty, a question on the catching up on the internships. Is that an insurance issue if the students are participating in the internship without being registered in the class?
No, because what we do is we insure the a number of students, not them by name, not individually. So we carry like a blanket insurance policy for liability for a certain number of students that we expect to have out on site. So it covers anyone who's interning for CCA. So we have adults and K-12 students doing internships.
I'm just thinking from a parent point of view, okay, my kid didn't get a chance to participate and he's doing it this summer and he gets injured or he's...
We cover him.
It's like, well, he's not legally in the class, so...
Well, they are, because we keep their roster open so that we can enter the completion of their internship. So they are legally in the class still. We work with our liability insurance carriers basically on a case-by-case basis, but we would cover it completely if they were injured.
Okay, so it's like kind of like an incomplete. If they've kind of got an incomplete and they're going to finish it.
Yes.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
And that, I do want to move on. Those were our accomplishments this year, but I also want to tell you a little bit about our plans for next year, because I sometimes feel like, since we only meet every few months, that I may be leaving you guys out of the loop sometimes. But we plan to open our 3rd College and Career Center right when school starts. Capo Valley will be ready. And then the other two will be opening, the other 3. The next one on the list is San Clemente, and then Tesoro and San Juan Hills. And we'll be opening all 3 of them before spring. Okay, so we're working on that work. And just so you know, the funding for those is coming from that K-12 Strong Workforce Program on the Capistrano side. This is not really CCA money, it's Capistrano's grant allocation for the K-12 Strong Workforce. We're using that money to build these career centers. So the initiative that they gave us was to enhance college and career guidance. And that's how we're doing it, by building these career centers and staffing them. So we're using that money just for that. Okay. We're also, we have our partnership with Futurology. I work with them very closely. I meet with them once a week and we go over their work. I will help them develop their calendar of services for each career center. And then we're also working with each site's counselors and academic advisors on making sure that we're offering both college and career guidance in these centers moving forward. It's been a great partnership. Each school site is so excited about these centers and the opportunities that that they have to what they can offer through there. And the sky's the limit as to what we can do in serving all students. So feed those feeder schools, the middle and elementary schools, and the high school students. And then we're building a few new labs in the upcoming year, and we're upgrading a couple of labs. If we get all this money from the state, as soon as we receive it, we'll start upgrading equipment and labs for existing programs. Some of our computers are getting old, so we've got to replace them. And we'll start enhancing and adding new labs. One of the new labs that we're planning to do is at the elementary school. It's that animatronics lab that is still on the docket. We're waiting for the governor to sign the budget to see exactly how much funding we're going to have, and then we're moving forward with it. And then we're also adding a lab at the adult transition campus in culinary and tech. So there will be a brand new culinary lab there. I've got the plans all ready right now. We're just going to go through it all and then give them the word to get started. And then there'll be a technology lab similar to the one at Dana Hills, but with equipment that's a little more friendly and easier to operate, but will provide them with the skills to get jobs in entry-level jobs in those areas. And before I move on, I do want to just say a few words. So I apologize this is so long, but I haven't seen you guys in a while. I do want to say a few words about Cindy, who is going to be retiring at the end of June. And so I wanted to just let you know that, you know, Cindy has served in many roles over the years that she's been with CCA. She's been here since 2003, so a long time. And so she's had her hands in all aspects of accounting over the years. And you could say that she's a jack of all trades because she's done everything here. So we appreciate that. But most importantly, at least to all of us, is that she's prepared our paychecks. And so, you know, the payroll person is always the favorite, right? So we're really going to miss her. She's handled it all with grace under pressure because she gets a lot of pressure from all of us. So we appreciate that. And I, on a personal note, I just want you to know that Cindy loves her dog, Louie, who's behind her on the bed. You could probably might be able to catch a glimpse of Louie. Of course, she loves her husband and her kids, too. But Louie, I'll just let you know, Louie is the star of the Christmas card every year. So, I can tell you, he is her baby. So, we wish her the best of luck in her new adventures. Oh, she's going to show us Louie. In her new adventures in retirement, and from all of us, Cindy, you'll be very missed. So, thank you for everything that you do for us, Cindy.
Can I add a comment? I think I remember Cindy even before CCA.
Yeah.
As a PTA treasurer back in the day. So thank you for your continued service to us and to students. Thanks, Cindy.
I agree. Thank you, Cindy. I think all board members know how much we depend on accurate and accountable financial information. It's vital to the decisions that we make. So much appreciated what you've done for us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Congratulations on your retirement. Thank you. Congratulations. What are you going to be doing?
Yeah, a lot of projects. I'm going to do some remodeling, and that's the first thing on my list. But
Dog walking.
I'm going to walk my dog a lot, you know, and try to get a lot of exercise. And
good. Well,
that's about it for now.
Have fun.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move to our next item, which are comments from the public. Do we have any, Kathy?
We do not.
Okay, thank you. Then we move to consent calendar. Are there any items on the consent calendar that board members need to pull off? That's items 5 through 15.
Question on 15, and it may be answered and when we talk about the budget, and that's kind of the cash advance from.
Yes.
I don't need to pull that item as long as we can discuss it as part of the budget discussion. Is that okay?
It will be part of that discussion, Patty?
Yes.
Okay, then I don't need to pull it. So I'll move approval of the consent calendar. Consent items.
Thank you. Second?
A second.
Thank you. Can you do a roll call, please, Kathy?
Trustee Bronstein?
Aye.
Trustee Jones?
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas?
Aye.
Trustee Perry?
Aye.
Trustee Vickers?
Yes.
Before we move on, could I please introduce Lupe Holgen, who has replaced Anne and is inundated with work permits right now. Lupe was a sub, we call her Lupe, she was a sub with CUSD and we were actually able to steal her. She's been doing very well. She came highly recommended from CUSD and we're very happy to have her.
Thank you, Kathy. Welcome. Okay, we have a number of discussion and our action items. The first is the 2021-22 proposed final budget. And this is Cindy.
Hey, I present the proposed final budget for 2021-22. And revenue is projected at $2,789,742. And this consists of interest income of $36,000. The career and technical incentive grant for 2020-21, which is a carryover, $554,503. K-Strong Workforce Pathways Improvement Grant of the $57,335. And Pathways Coordinator Grant of $125. Also STIRS on behalf of $140,127, which is offset in the STIRS expense. And the California Adult Education Program of $418,956. And the JPA District Allocations of $1,457,821. So the overall reduction in revenue is $1,796,978, or 39%. And this is due to of not recording our 2021-22 CTIG grant until later in the year when it's actually received. Hopefully that'll be in about December, I think Patty's hoping on.
Wow.
So
we've already submitted the application. It was due June 9th, and we submitted it a little early. And so the state has promised that the State Board of Education will see those allocations at their September board meeting and approve them. Then they'll get the grants out to us after that. So we expect to have the actual funds in our hands by December.
Expenditures are projected at $2,932,158, and that consists of certificated salaries of $1,020,253, a decrease of $444,178 over estimated actuals, and that's due to reductions in additional assignments for instructors, reductions in class offerings, and staff assignments. In addition, our wage and step increases have been frozen at this time. Classified salaries $447,646, and that's a decrease of $64,953, and that's due to reductions in staff assignments, and also the wage and step increases has been frozen here. Employee benefits of $682,407, and that's a decrease of $92,933.
And that's primarily because of the decrease in salaries. In expenditures for textbooks, supplies, and non-cap equipment, $82,934, and that's a decrease of $83,526 due to the necessary cost-saving measures because we are not recording the CTIG grant at this time. And services and other operating expenditures, $698,919, and that's a decrease of $177,985, and then again, that's due to the cost-saving measures necessary at this time. Overall, for the 2021-22 adopted budget, we're projecting deficit spending at this time in the amount of $142,416. And as mentioned, this is due to not recording the CTIG 21-22 grant until the funds are received, most likely in December. And that's it.
So I'll bring up my question here. Mm-hmm. How do we account for the advancement from CUSD to cover the delay in the grant?
So they will be reducing the allocation that they pass through, and we will be making it up in our CTIG fund. So after we borrowed the funds, basically they gave us that advance. We did receive the CTIG funds in about 2 weeks ago, right, Cindy?
Yes.
So we did receive the funds. So that money has a carryover of about $560,000 that we're taking into next year. That'll cover the advance that we received from the district. So it all works out, two different pots of money, but one pays back the other. So we've actually already received that money. So on the books, it's listed as a receivable, as a payable to CUSD. And when we receive our funds for the new year, we recognize that $560,000 from CTIG that's carrying over. And that money, along with the allocation from CUSD, will wipe that liability off of our books. So that's how we're covering it now. And to avoid this happening again next year, because our grant comes so late in the year, we are not booking the CTIG allocation until we actually receive the fund, which, as you know, most school districts receive a grant award notice, and that's when they book it. Most school districts know their budget allocations before they start the new year. We do not. So because of that, we will have a very tight 4 or 5 or 6 months in the beginning of the year. And if we do not receive the allocation halfway through the year, we'll have to implement the cost saving plans that we've put into this budget, which means potentially canceling some after-school semester classes. And all of our staff will be taking furlough days, which in some cases are up to 2 months. We did the same thing last year, and of course we didn't have to implement those plans, but we're planning for that just in case we have to implement those plans at the semester point. Whatever we have to do to get through. But because we're getting all this extra money this year, my plan is to utilize that money for its needs, what they allocate us to use it for. And instead of using the pass-through from each of our districts in that manner, I'm planning to put some money in our cash reserves at the end of the year next year, because we will have that extra money for 2 years in a row. I can't put grant money in our cash reserves, but I can use the grant and the emergency funds in a manner that will free up some of our pass-through allocation money from our districts that I can use to build our cash reserves. That will help us get through a tough time in the following years if we go back to having our grants come so late in the year. Kind of funny, because they'll let you spend the money as of July 1st, but we don't receive the money until June. And for a small organization like us, it's just not possible for us to float those expenses for the whole year.
Okay, maybe I need to sit down with Patty and I was going to say Cindy, but Cindy's out of here. So, because I am not a finance person. I trust what you say, that you're doing the right thing, but what I don't see in this budget is that $300,000, whether it's booked as a...
Oh, it doesn't show in that budget because that is, it's in the estimated actuals, but it won't show until next year because we received the cash this year and then next year we owe it. So it doesn't show, you don't see our liabilities in that budget figure. Is that correct, Cindy?
Well, you'll see
it in actuals and a budget.
Well, you'll see it in the actuals as a loan. That is a liability.
Yeah,
okay, I guess that's what I didn't see. And again, I'm not a finance person, but I
don't think it's in the estimated actuals, though, Cindy, because we didn't do it until June or May.
Right.
And the estimated actual is only through April. Correct?
Right. It'll be in the actuals, not the estimated.
Okay. Yeah.
So perhaps any time that appears going forward, if you could footnote that.
Sure.
I know for Laguna's board, anytime there's transfers, or because we don't do trans, we haven't for years since we're locally funded, and we transfer money to ourselves and then transfer it back to our special reserve account, and we always make sure that that's noted in a board meeting so that we can follow that and track that. And I think that's probably what Martha would, I think it would help Martha feel more confident that we are not lost in the overall figures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. And on the JPA certification, mm-hmm. there's a couple of things that there's one that says under additional financial indicators, do cash flow projections show that the JPA will end the budget year with a negative cash balance in the general fund?
So no, we don't. That 300, we have enough money in our ending fund balance to cover our deficit for next year that we're projecting. That deficit that we're projecting now will go away as soon as we receive our CTIC money. We won't end the year with a deficit.
Okay. All right. So the part there is end the budget year. Okay. And then the other one was... at the very end about additional fiscal indicators, have there been any personnel changes in the JPA director or financial official positions within the last 12 months? And they're really...
That won't happen until the actual end of the year report that you'll be seeing in September. So you have to remember this is estimated actuals, and since Cindy's working through June, there has not been a change yet, and the change will be in the next year.
Okay, all right. Okay, I get it. Okay, never mind.
We're still in June, so we haven't closed the year yet, and we'll be doing that. Cindy's smiling because she knows she doesn't have to do it, but we'll be working on closing the year in July.
Okay. All right, that's as much as my financial deficient mind can handle right now. So,
are there any other board questions before we have a motion? If not, I'd like a motion, please, to approve.
I move to approve.
Second.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Trustee Bronstein.
Aye.
Trustee Jones.
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas.
Aye.
Trustee Perry.
Aye.
Trustee Vickers.
Yes. We move to item 17, implementation of furlough days for 2021-22. And this is to you, Patty.
Yes. We are budgeting for furlough days. As we put the budget together, there are some drastic cost-saving measures in that budget, including furlough days. We hope that we won't have to implement them. We've had to do this in the past as well, and it's all because we don't have that direct funding from the state ahead of time. So because we didn't want to book the CTIG grant as a projection or an estimate, and we want to wait until we have the funds in our hot lands. In order to cut costs, we've had to implement these potential furlough days. They are, will not happen until the very end of the year, and we're hopeful that we'll be able to come back to you and let you know that we've received our grant funds and we don't have to implement these furlough days. But right now, we do.
Thank you. Any questions on this? Have a motion, please.
I move approval. I second.
Is there any further discussion?
Just thank you for having a plan in case.
It's good we can wait into the year
and yeah.
find out if they need to be implemented. Roll call, Kathy, please.
Trustee Bronstein.
Aye.
Trustee Jones.
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas.
Aye.
Trustee Perry.
Aye.
Trustee Vickers.
Yes. Agenda item 18 is enrollment data. And Kim Thomas is presenting this.
Good morning. I present for you the enrollment data for the 2021-2020 school year for both middle and high school. And I've also included the comparison data from the prior years. Well, prior year, 1920. So you guys have probably already looked at it and just wondering if you have any questions.
Any questions on the enrollment?
Just a comment that it's not as dire as I thought it might have been.
Yeah.
Given the year.
Yeah. There was a lot of movement. You know, some teachers pulled for this and some teachers moved over to that. So I think I just don't think it's hit yet. Maybe next year.
No, I think we're in good shape. Yeah. I honestly thought we were going to be down about 3,000 or 4,000 students. And for us to be down only 1,500 in high school and a few hundred in middle school, I was very happily surprised. And our enrollment numbers so far look pretty good for fall.
Excellent.
Good. Thank you. We don't have action on this, it's just information. So we move to agenda item 19, conflict of interest code. And this is Patty.
Patty, can you unmute?
Oh my gosh. this is an annual requirement that we bring forward to the board for approval every year.
Any questions? If not, I'd have a motion, please.
I move approval.
Second.
Any discussion? Retain. Roll call, please, Kathy.
Trustee Bronstein.
Aye.
Trustee Jones.
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas.
Aye.
Trustee Perry.
Aye.
Trustee Vickers.
Yes. Agenda item 20 is resolution 06-2021 year-end internal transfers. Patty.
Yes, again, this is an annual requirement that we bring forward the any internal transfers for the year for approval.
Move any approval. Questions? Thank you.
Second.
Any discussion? A roll call, please.
Trustee Bronstein.
Aye.
Trustee Jones.
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas.
Aye.
Trustee Perry.
Aye.
Trustee Vickers.
Yes. Agenda item 21, resolution 07-2021, salary schedules for 21-22. Patty.
Thank you. Yes, there were no changes to our salary schedules for 21-22. This is an annual request for you to approve our salary schedules before we move forward. In addition, our steps and wages remain frozen. This will actually be the third year that we have had frozen steps and increases. And my hope is that to bring something before the board before the end of next year to reinstate our steps for all of our teachers and staff.
Question, even though the state budget does include a COLA this year, we are not choosing to implement that at
all? It doesn't get passed through to ROPs.
Okay.
Yeah.
So since we are in different regulations, then is there a limit on how many years we can freeze these?
So I think
how many can only freeze it?
Oh, no, there's not. During the last freeze, we actually had them frozen for 8 years.
Okay.
So, of course, when budget times are good, then we like to unfreeze them, and that's my hope for this year, that we will be able to unfreeze them and retroactive them to July, and then I'd like to potentially bring a stipend forward to the board to try and make up for the 2 years prior if we're able to.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? If not, a motion, yeah, please.
I have one, actually. This is kind of under that category of salary. The instructors you're replacing back under the consent calendar, one of whom I know we've talked about is engineering. Did you have any issues hiring people with the current salary or for the replacements?
No. A few years ago, the board gave me the authority to offer a higher wage to those highly technical positions, so a teacher in engineering or robotics or, you know, surgical tech, those highly technical jobs, I can start them at a higher wage.
Okay.
So we have been starting them at step 10 or 12 even.
Okay.
Just to get them in, and we explain that they may only get a raise 1 year. The only thing that changes our step increases other than that is a COLA. And so we have not had a difficult time hiring people based on the wages.
Did you get your first choice in engineering? I know you and I talked about it. Was it that person?
So we did not get our first choice. Luckily, we had four very good applicants. Our first choice is retiring in a year, and he decided that he better stay put.
Okay.
But the one that we are potentially hiring, he is an astrophysicist. He's got a wonderful history of teaching engineering, and he's going to be fantastic. So we're excited.
Thank you. Any other questions? If not, have a motion, please.
So moved.
I second.
Thank you. Roll call, please, Kathy.
Trustee Bronstein.
Aye.
Trustee Jones.
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas.
Aye.
Trustee Perry.
Aye.
Trustee Vickers.
Yes. Item 22, Resolution 08-2021, Authorization of Signatures for Schools First Federal Credit Union and Farmers and Merchants Bank. Patty.
Hi. Yes, again, this is an annual resolution that we ask you to approve the signatures on our bank account.
If no questions, may I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Oh.
Roll call, please, Kathy.
Trustee Bronstein.
Aye.
Trustee Jones.
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas.
Aye.
Trustee Perry.
Aye.
Trustee Vickers.
Yes. Agenda item 23, Resolution 09-2021, Authorization to Approve Vendor Payments on the Business Plus System. Patty.
Yes, this is also an annual approval for this resolution that allows us to run our vendor payments through the Business Plus program electronically.
If you have no questions, may I have a motion, please?
So move.
Second.
Kathy, roll call, please.
Trustee Bronstein.
Aye.
Trustee Jones.
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas.
Aye.
Trustee Perry.
Aye.
Trustee Vickers.
Yes. 24, Resolution 10-2021, Authorization to Approve Vendor Payments Electronically.
So, in addition to processing the vendor payments the vendor items electronically, we pay them electronically, and Orange County Department of Ed has my signature on file, and so we request that you approve our ability to do that as well.
Thank you. If no questions, may I have a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
Roll call, Kathy.
Yes, Trustee Bronstein.
Aye.
Trustee Jones.
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas?
Aye.
Trustee Perry?
Aye.
Trustee Vickers?
Yes. 25, CCA calendar for the 2021-22 school year. Ms. Patty.
This is also an annual item that we ask that you approve our calendar for the school year. We work with both districts so that we are able to offer our teachers and that teach in both districts the same type of calendar that we have in the school districts. So occasionally there's a conflict and we work with those teachers that only teach at that school district.
Thank you. We have any questions for Patty? If not, a motion, please. Patty, I know that the spring break is different in the two districts, and obviously we're going to go with Capistrano because that's big. My question is, do students from Laguna that are enrolled during that spring break time, do they still come or are they just absent?
So if the class is held at Laguna Beach, then we honor the Laguna Beach spring break. If the class is held at Capistrano, we honor the Capistrano spring break. And our teachers are aware of the spring break for each district. And so if Laguna Beach after school students are in a class on a Capistrano campus, our teachers know that they're going to be absent that week. And so then they just help them catch up the next week. It's worked out okay for many years. I don't think we've ever had the same spring break.
No, probably not. No, that's great that it has worked out okay. Thank you.
I have a question. For a long time, the school year start was very different between CUSD and Laguna Beach. And I think you've changed your school year. Is that correct? I don't know.
Yes.
Okay. We just started at about the same time we start.
Right.
Okay.
We started just a week, not quite a week difference.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you live to tell about it.
Well, sort of. That may crop up again now that we're through the COVID stuff, but.
Okay. Well, good deal.
It'll probably crop up each time we approve the year's calendar. Because it moves around, you know. But okay, any other questions? Have a motion, please.
Move to approve.
Second.
Roll call, Kathy.
Trustee Bronstein.
Aye.
Trustee Jones.
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas.
Aye.
Trustee Perry.
Aye.
Trustee Vickers.
Yes. Our last item is adjournment of the meeting. May I have a motion?
A move to adjourn the meeting.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Trustee Bronstein.
Aye.
Trustee Jones.
Aye.
Trustee McNicholas.
Aye.
Trustee Perry.
Aye.
Trustee Vickers.
Yes. Thank you.